Hello everybody, my name is Sayed Moun, and this is On's Gotta Talk for Wednesday, 2nd of February, 2022. In today's episode, we got a leaks roundup of the Galaxy S22 series, which will be revealed at Galaxy Unpacked next week, so we're going to talk about that, obviously, after this. Oppo is planning to release a folding flip phone, plus Sony buys Bungie, and, well, the New York Times buys Wordle, the iconic sort of game that has taken Twitter by surprise. A surprising acquisition, I think no one saw that coming. There's lots to talk about, so let's get rolling, shall we? First up, this time next week, Samsung will show its new goodies at its Galaxy Unpacked event. We all know that they'll be spending the vast majority of the Unpacked event talking about the S22 series, so we've got a roundup of all the S22 leaks and rumors. As I've said in the last episode, there isn't much we don't know about the S22, oh well. The first scoop comes from Frontpage Tech, and if you're wondering how much the S22 series will cost, well, it will have the same pricing as the S21 series. So the base spec S21 will start from $800, and obviously the Galaxy S21 Ultra probably will have the same starting price. That's right, the same starting price as the S21. Not so surprising, but hopefully that's the case. I still think the S22 could cost a bit more, due in part to current circumstances. Next one is basically a leak. Even Blast boasted on Twitter promotional pics from Samsung's Italy site for the S22 series, which got deleted afterwards on his account. It reveals some things we know all along, as well as some little details we haven't heard of until now. For starters, the S22 series will have the 4nm Exynos 2200 chip out of the gate. The Snapdragon, obviously, equivalent will be there for regions that don't offer the Exynos chip, like the US and China. In the box, you'll get the phone, a USB-C cable, and a SIM eject tool. On the S22 and the S22 Plus, you get a 6.1-inch and 6.6-inch AMOLED displays, respectively, with FHD Plus resolution, 120Hz refresh rate, and HDR10 Plus support. That's in the marketing materials. Both the S22 and S22 Plus come with a 50 megapixel main sensor, 12 megapixel ultrawide, and 10 megapixel telephoto sensor on the rear, along with a 10 megapixel selfie camera. The S22 Ultra, on the other hand, is a whole nother beast in a way. It features a 6.8 inch QHD plus 120 hertz AMOLED display, built-in S Pen, quad camera setup at the rear, so that's 108 megapixel main sensor, 12 megapixel ultrawide, and you get a set of two telephoto sensors that obviously provide zoom capability in a way. And these cameras come with super clear glass and that 100x space zoom that Samsung's known for on the Ultras. And you have 40 megapixel selfie camera on the front. Now, you're probably wondering about the fast charging situation on the S22 series. We haven't known much about it until now. We found out from the same exact photos, from the same exact promotional pictures that have been leaked, the S22 and the S22 Plus will feature 25-watt fast charging, and the S22 Ultra will come with 45-watt fast charging. For context, the regular S22 can be topped up from 0 to 100% at 25 watts in just 70 minutes. Now, this is a bit strange given what you can get with competing flagship phones like the Xiaomi 12 series, and again, rivaling options from rivaling brands, where charging speeds are hitting almost 100 watts safely, but I guess Samsung is playing it safe and they're trying to offer a well-rounded out phone in a way. So again, I think that they don't want to offer super fast charging or else there could be an issue with battery drain and degradation. So I think they want to offer a healthy battery after probably like 5 years of use. So again, pretty interesting nonetheless. Alright, moving from Samsung to OnePlus, the brand that really likes to never really settle but settles for something usual. 91 Mobiles reports that OnePlus has delayed the rollout of a unified OS for the global OnePlus 10 Pro. So the China one's already available, and that comes with a version of ColorOS from Oppo. And that instead, you'll get Oxygen OS 12 at launch. If you remember very well, I think it was last year, OnePlus announced that it was moving to a unified OS which used elements of Oppo's ColorOS thanks to a tie-up with Oppo. It's most likely that we'll see the update a couple of months after the OnePlus 10 Pro's launch. So I'm sure there are some issues that probably have. They didn't specify what was causing the delay, whether it was some specific bug or functionality issue. But we'll have to see, probably. I'm sure they're going to still offer it with the latest Oxygen OS to play it safe a bit. And I'm sure that they're going to roll this unified option down the road, probably later on in the summer, maybe. Who knows? Smart Pre and On Leaks have reported that OnePlus is planning to launch another Nord, the Nord CE2 Lite 5G. Excuse the long name, though. It's a bit stretched. This model will arrive first in the Indian market. Interestingly enough, the CE2 Lite, as we'll kind of call it, features a 6.59-inch FHD fluid display, meaning it's a high refresh rate display with up to 90 Hz display, as it is. Snapdragon 695, top-of-the-line mid-range chip from Qualcomm, triple camera setup at the back. You got a 64-megapixel main, 2-megapixel depth, and 2-megapixel macro. There's no option for ultrawide, so I'm sure ditching the ultrawide for macro and telephoto cameras, along with a 16-megapixel selfie camera and 5,000 mAh battery with 33-watt fast charging. This phone is basically OnePlus's answer to, say, the Realme 9 series or the Oppo Reno phones, and targets that side of the smartphone market, and it'll probably be released around the same time as the Nord CE2. That's how I'm looking at it, if you think about it. So, again, they're not settling for just the flagships. They're looking to target the mid-range side of the segment, the mid-range market, you could say, the sub-$500 market, which is pretty lucrative. I mean, there are a lot of people still buy phones around $300 to $500. It's very lucrative, and there are consumers in emerged in developed markets, you could say, the US, that would want an affordable option, and they want to spend $1,000, but they want something attractive and affordable on a contract. So again, it's a very lucrative market wherever you go, in a way. Alrighty, and this one is interesting. Oppo is looking to release a folding flip phone pretty soon, according to tipster Mikul Sharma, who's on Twitter at Stuff Listings. This is going to be Oppo's second foldable after the Find N, and it's going to be a folding flip phone, like the Z Flip 3. But, and he's basically said this, it'll be cheaper than the Z Flip 3, so I'll probably throw my, I don't want to say estimation or guess, I'd probably put a safe guess here. I'd likely assume that probably this phone will cost somewhere between $800 and $950, as it is. If this is true, hopefully, it looks like the foldable market is seriously heating up, but that the prices are coming down to a point where more people will get seriously purchase foldables and use them as like their daily driver devices. We don't know what the phone will have or what unique features there'll be or what kind of display will be on this folding flip phone, but it's pretty interesting nonetheless. Alrighty, this is a interesting story. Elon Musk obviously happens to run SpaceX, Tesla, but SpaceX has been running a service called Starlink as a satellite broadband satellite service, which aims to offer basically high speed, basically fiber-like broadband via satellite to anyone anywhere in the world, especially for those who are living in remote regions. And they've been running their service for a while, and now they've launched a premium tier that promises to offer you up speeds of up to 500 megabytes per second, between 150 to 500 megabytes per second download, 20 to 40 megabytes per second upload, no data caps as always, like regular Starlink, and a latency, and obviously similar latency, and apparently will perform better in extreme weather conditions, and you get 24/7 prioritized support, and the service is $500 a month for up to 500 megabytes per second, and apparently Starlink is claiming that they're targeting small offices, storefronts, and super users across the globe. Basically, people want access to satellite broadband. They're willing to pay anything and everything to get it, whether they live in the suburbs or obviously out in the city or even in the rural mountains, which is obviously what this service would be ideal for, in a way. So you get a similar latency, obviously, because you're using the Starlink service, and it will take a while to go from the ground to the sky and back. So there is that latency, obviously, going between the ground and the sky, in a way. But you get a faster download speed, and comes with a $2,500 improved dish that apparently, according to Elon himself, has twice the area of this phased array, which is used to pick up the signals and gives you a broader scan angle. So generally, the dish is pretty massive. It's a square dish, but it will pick up the signal. It'll pick up more of that Starlink signal to get you that high-speed internet, which is pretty interesting. Now, there's the regular circular dish that everyone is known, which is obviously large, and obviously it uses phased arrays to pick up a signal from the sky. So you don't have to add anything else extra, interestingly enough. But interestingly, the premium dishes basically, and the service, the deliveries will be available in the second quarter of this year. So basically, come summertime, you're able to get Starlink Premium, which is interesting over the regular Starlink, which obviously gives you up to 250 megabytes per second, but costs $100 a month, and you have to pay for a $500 dish to connect to the internet. I've seen a lot of videos online where people have said that this is a rock solid service. There's some occasional interruptions and blackouts. This is probably going to be an issue because interruptions will be there, because it's a constellation that is kind of moving in geostationary orbit and is targeting various parts of the world, and that's how it's very fast. But generally, this is a premium service. I think it's for those people who really want high-speed broadband. They don't want to settle for 4G or for ADSL internet that is pretty slow. And you want to connect to the internet no matter where you are on Earth. You're out in the park, you're in the mountains, you're in a van, you want high-speed internet, this is probably an option. I'm also probably sure that over time, they're going to turn a profit off this service, given how much they're spending on taking the satellites to orbit, and also charging for such hefty premium subscriptions. But again, that's the price you pay to connect from anywhere in the world, in a way. So this is pretty interesting, if you think about it. Now, there are a lot of people who would go out and say that $500 for up to 500 megabytes per second, you don't even know if you get exact 500 megabytes per second. I live in X and Y and Z country. I live in this part of Europe, this part of Asia. I pay $50 for these speeds. But the thing you gotta realize here is that this is delivered via satellite, and satellite broadband is usually not that cheap. It is expensive, but you're paying for that connectivity, for that instant connectivity from almost anywhere in the world, you know. And you're basically paying a premium for that. There's that premium attached. So that's something to keep in mind. So, but again, it's a pretty cool technology. I mean, this is quite mind-blowing stuff, nonetheless. We got to talk about the two other stories we mentioned earlier. First up, Wordle, which is I don't know how you pronounce it. Wordly? Yeah. Wordle, a very famous puzzle game. A daily word game. So you basically guess 5 words, and obviously if you have to keep you basically have 6 tries in a way, and if you manage to guess the order and all that kind of stuff, then, and if you win, you obviously win the game. If not, then you have to try the next day. Now, this game has blown up, obviously, and it's been the talk of Twitter, and it's been immensely popular. It was made by this developer called Josh Wardle. He released it in October. Basically made this game for his partner on the other side of the world, and she was bored, and he was bored, and they had to play something that was interesting, and he was a software developer, so might as well. He coded up a game that's based off word puzzles in a way, and Wordle has obviously become a sensation. Obviously, millions play it every single day. And again, as I said, it's the talk of Twitter, in a way. And now the New York Times, having obviously well-known for its crossword and its cooking and its news and all that kind of stuff, they obviously have a very solid business around crossword. They obviously have a subscription service where you can play all sorts of word puzzles and games. And people pay money for that, and it's quite popular, in a way. And now the New York Times has acquired Wordle for apparently a low 7 figures. They've not disclosed the price, I think people would have guessed how much it would have, money would have made for the developer itself. He'd be like, oh, he'd be a millionaire, but obviously they've... But you're probably now wondering that if it's going to be available only in the New York Times, then it'll be behind a paywall, right? According to the New York Times, and they've announced it in their press release, be free to play for new and existing players, and your progress will be maintained if you've played it previously. So if you have any wins or streaks, it'll be maintained, and there won't be any changes to its gameplay. But I'm probably guessing that they're going to add some additions or variations off Wordle. But it apparently joins New York Times' selection of puzzle games, including the iconic crossword, the spelling bee, letterboxed, tiles, and vertex, which is pretty interesting in a way. So it's cool to see that a massive newspaper has bought into a popular puzzle game. If you want to maintain a copy and play it for free, like, there are tutorials online and you can download the actual game, because it's literally running in your browser. Apparently it does not run on the cloud or anything, it runs in your browser, so you can go and sort of run the game offline, sort of. So there are tutorials. I'm not going to tell you how. I'd probably suggest you wait till this is on with the New York Times and play it from there, but there are tutorials you can find. If you search online, you'll find like tutorials on how to say right click and save the game, because you can play it offline actually, so pretty interesting nonetheless. Another acquisition that's actually has been a talk, sort of you could say that been the talk of town, has been Sony's acquisition of Bungie. Now, if you don't know Bungie, they're a pretty well-known studio. They are a small kind of independent studio that's known for developing Destiny and Destiny 2, pretty iconic MMORPG games, and developed the original Halo, and was part of Microsoft originally, which is what makes this a big deal. It was originally part of Sony, and then Sony, and then it got spun off from Microsoft as an independent studio, and obviously then they've worked to create Destiny, and obviously that's where the connection with PlayStation started, and now Sony owns Bungie. Apparently, it'll continue to be a multi-platform and independent studio and publisher, and will sit alongside the PlayStation Studio portfolio, sort of, as I said, as an independent studio. Will not be completely PlayStation only from the moment the deal is done. So, pretty interesting. And obviously, there'll be no impact with your Destiny 2 content or potentially it being a PlayStation 5 exclusive. You don't have to worry about that. They're going to maintain the game with crossplay capabilities. So if you're playing on PC, don't worry. Destiny 2 will continue to get updates and expansions, which is good news to hear in a way. So now you're probably wondering how much Sony paid for Bungie. They paid $3.6 billion to acquire Bungie. So that's pretty interesting. Now, I'd probably guess that they did this in reaction to Microsoft buying out Activision Blizzard, and they had to have a rivaling studio that could create a big open world game, or pretty much create big open world games in direct competition to Activision Blizzard. So this consolidation is interesting, but I'm sure that they are doing this in reaction to Microsoft in a way. And it probably is good and bad in a way. I think it is bad for gamers in general, in that you might not get some top quality AAA games. They'll probably be from a set range of companies. I mean, the consolidation may not really be good for games in general. But then again, there's obviously a very strong indie scene, obviously. So I don't think we've had too much consolidation. We're still far from a highly consolidated gaming industry. There are a few big players, and then obviously there's a massive independent scene, but obviously it's kind of tough to be an independent studio and to create good games in that environment. So not really surprised with the state of affairs in the industry right now. I mean, content is king, as they say in gaming now. The hardware is not, you don't rule the hardware, because, well, you can't push enough of it, so you might as well try to have the content that could drive people to use your consoles more, or stream those games over the internet. So, again, it's a pretty interesting acquisition. I mean, but I would say it's like a knee-jerk reaction to Microsoft buying Activision Blizzard. They absolutely needed to have another AAA studio that can take on whatever Microsoft could do with Activision Blizzard. So it's pretty interesting, nonetheless. So yeah, what do you think of everything you've heard today? Let me know. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at @Sayed_Mao99. Follow me there if you can. Obviously, this time next week, we're going to be talking about everything that came at Unpacked. So if you don't want to miss that upcoming episode next week's episode, then as I said, don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening right now. If you're on Apple, leave a review. It'll help with discovering the podcast. And as I said, don't forget to share it to your friends and family. And all your support is definitely appreciated. And while that being said, till next week, this is your Bomb signing out. Stay safe, take care, wherever you are, whatever you're up to, and have a wonderful day. All right? Thank you for listening. Ciao.